This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings out there to everybody at TFMR. It's Thursday. That means it's time for another Thursday conversation. We're not going to have one of these next week because next Thursday will be right after the September FOMC meeting, and there'll be no shortage of stuff to talk about that day. But for this week, we have a Thursday conversation with a guy I've known now for several years by the name of John Rubino. Many of you are going to be familiar with John. He obviously is a renowned expert in the monetary system, precious metals. His site is called dollarcollapse.com. I'm sure several of you go there many times a day. He's also an author. One of the more famous books he wrote with Mr. Turk a few years ago called The Money Bubble. Also a book, more than a decade ago, called The Coming Collapse of the Dollar. And I'm just glad to consider John a friend. John, thank you so much for joining me.
Craig, good to talk to you again. And thank you for calling me renowned. That never gets old.
Well, and you are, for crying out loud. You're certainly more renowned than I am. And it's just great to get your input again, particularly, you know, given the name of your website, Dollar Collapse. But let's start there. Tell everybody, if they're not familiar with what you do, a little bit about what you do.
Well, yeah, I run dollarcollapse.com, which is a news aggregation slash blog site dedicated to chronicling our descent into financial chaos, which has been ongoing for a long time. You know, like you said, Craig, it's been quite a while since I co-wrote a couple of gloom and doom books with James Turk. And the world still hasn't ended, but it is in the process of ending. You know, so much is happening now that that really has a kind of an end game feel to it, that I think we're at least getting closer to it than we were back then.
You know, it's funny. One of the things I always talk about is how there's really nobody alive today that doesn't recall a time when the dollar wasn't the reserve currency of the world. I mean, if you were around in 1939 and paying attention, that makes you over 100 right now. And I just saw something earlier this week from Jim Reed at Deutsche Bank saying, you know, most everybody out there doesn't even know of a time that the dollar has been reserve currency. And that, from a historian standpoint, that's got to be on your mind too.
Well, you know, I think it's really interesting that the 1970s is the last time that there was actually a currency crisis in the U.S. and really globally. So you've got to be up there to remember that clearly. I do remember it almost by accident. I had started becoming a gold bug just by accidentally reading books on the subject when I was in college. So I was paying attention. That was in the 1970s, and I was paying attention then. So I remember those days. Most people don't.
Yeah.
But a lot is happening now that is reminiscent of the early part of the 1970s. For instance, back then we lost the Vietnam War, and we had this really, really chaotic withdrawal with those iconic pictures of people hanging on helicopters as we tried to get away from the embassy in Saigon. And just lately, you know, the Afghan war thing looks an awful lot like that and has kind of a similar impact on our national psyche. You know, we don't feel competent out there militarily right now. And then there were, in the 1970s, there were shortages of crucial commodities, just like there are now, with so many things just spiking in the commodity space and in housing and other places. And inflation started to pick up dramatically, just as it is now. And you know, that culminated in double-digit inflation, plunging dollar values, and spiking interest rates. You know, it was a huge crisis in the last few years of that decade. We're halfway to that now with a lot of what's happening right now. So I think, you know, we should spend some time talking about inflation, which is a brand new concept to a lot of people. You know, consumer price inflation is just a new thing to the average American. We haven't really had to experience it. We've had raging inflation, but in asset prices, houses, real estate, or houses and stocks and bonds have all been soaring, but we consider that good inflation. Now it's bad inflation and it's spreading.
Well, and you know, if you're collapsed, that's one way you measure the collapse of the dollar, is the collapse of purchasing power. And that is about the first thing I wanted to ask you about in this podcast, John. I mentioned the Fed meeting next week, and everybody waiting to see, you know, what Powell has to say, what he says in his press conference, you know, a tapering schedule, all the like. But he's been trying to maintain in what I consider a form of kind of covert yield curve control. He's been maintaining that this bump in inflation is transitory, you know, and that just means it's going to go back to 1% at some point. Even if it goes back to 3%, it's still from these much, much, much higher levels for generally everything than it was a year ago. Like I said, as this relates to dollar collapse, you know, purchasing power collapse, where do you see this whole inflation argument and how do you think that impacts the Fed?
Well, first of all, there are two ways that are used to measure a currency out there. One is like the dollar index, as we talked about before we went live here. That's the fictitious way of judging the strength of a currency. You measure one crappy fiat currency against all the other crappy fiat currencies. They're all declining in value, but they're declining relative to each other, not very much, because they're all falling. So the dollar could, you know, using this comparison model, the dollar could in theory fall by 80% in its real value, but still be considered strong because the euro fell by 85% at the same time, right? The best way to measure the value of a currency is, like you said, purchasing power. In other words, what can you buy with it? And by that measure, the dollar has been declining pretty steadily for our entire lifetimes, but not fast enough to get people's attention, you know, 1%, 2%, or 3% a year. In terms of the necessities of life, not counting financial assets. So most people don't have a sense that their currency is declining dramatically, but lately that has started to change. You know, even the CPI, even the official government inflation statistic, which is a lie in its own right, is up to like 4% or 5% right now, which is a crisis level. You know, 2% used to be where the Fed felt compelled to start raising interest rates. Now it's twice that or more. But that's just one measure of inflation. And it's definitely not the best one because you've got commodities in a lot of cases soaring. You know, a lot of industrial commodities are up way more than 5% in the last year. And then there's shrinkflation, which is, you know, you buy a package of something and it's 10% smaller than it was last year, but it's the same price. So according to the government stats, you know, the price hasn't changed. That's zero inflation. But it actually was 5% inflation because the thing shrunk. And that's a tricky, sneaky way of inflation to insinuate itself into society. But it's happening all over the place now. And then you got labor costs. You know, companies are all hard up for workers. So they're having to pay more, obviously. Yep. So the cost of wages, of labor, is up dramatically and probably much more than 5%. And shipping costs are through the roof because the supply chains are all screwed up. So there was some stat about how many Lamborghinis it costs to rent one shipping container ship for like a week or a month or something like that. It was a crazy stat just because shipping is so expensive now. And then houses are at record levels and the financial assets are still at record levels and cryptos are at record levels. All of those things are dramatically more than 5% inflation in each sector. So you add it all up and there's no way that the real decline in the value of the dollar is only 5% this year. It's much, much higher measured against the stuff that you can buy with it.
And again, as you mentioned, that's the I guess one of the lies or the schemes that's perpetuated by the bankers in the financial system is they always quote the dollar index, you know, which was cooked up, I don't even know how many years ago. And it only measures the dollar versus other fiat currencies, primarily the euro. And so if the dollar can just simply be devalued at a rate slightly slower than the rest of them, the dollar is perceived as strong. And it kind of like the CPI or the jobs report, or the if you keep the CPI down, you get higher real GDP growth. Doesn't it seem like all these pieces kind of fit together to try to keep a scheme going?
I mean, the CPI is a really horrendous lie itself, because what they do is they go in there and they root around in the things that they're measuring and they take out the stuff that is going up. They do a thing called substitution, where if steak prices go up, they say, well, people are going to shift to chicken, so we'll just measure chicken and forget about steaks, you know, and they do all kinds of things like that in order to lower the reported rate of inflation. And part of why they do stuff like that is that a lot of government benefits are indexed, right? So Social Security goes up and becomes more costly if inflation is higher. So it's in the interest of the government Well, first of all, they want to appear to be good managers of the currency, obviously. They want to be competent, but they also want to save money on Social Security by screwing over old people. In other words, by raising Social Security benefits at a slower rate than the cost of living is increasing. So they squeeze seniors by lying about inflation. And, yeah. You know, besides being just despicable, it's also obvious, you know, why don't people see this? Because it's really not hard to figure out that that's happening just by looking at what your life costs versus what they're reporting. Now, when that actually starts to happen is when the numbers get big enough to catch people's attention and the, you know, the stuff that they're buying gets dramatically more expensive. And that's happening right now. It's really crucial to understand that we're entering a time when the psychology of the marketplace is going to shift to high inflation expectations. In other words, people are going to realize that that not only is their life getting more expensive, but it's going to continue at possibly an accelerating rate going forward. And then they start acting accordingly, which is to say the financial markets spin totally out of control.
As this relates to the Fed next week, John, you know, I've been wondering about how the precious metals been managing to go sideways now, for especially gold. Gold's down on the year, given all of this. You mentioned inflation expectations. The Fed's 3-year forward expectation now over 4%, which means you've got negative 2.7% at least real interest rates. But all of that seems to be being ignored because the market seems to be convinced of all this transitory stuff that Powell's talking about. Do you, in your mind, do you see this kind of as a Powell being painted into a corner? On one hand, if they keep printing and supporting the bond market the way they are to keep interest rates down, you know, he's got all kinds of trouble. We got the $1.2 trillion in daily repo because there's so much cash out there. So you're threatening to put short rates negative. But at the same time, if he starts paring back QE, you run the risk of pulling like his put that's perceived under the bond market, and all of a sudden rates spike. And then that, you know, what obviously cause all kinds of sorts of problems for states, municipalities, government, personal, you know, private investors, everybody else. So as you look at ahead to next week in Fed policy, what do you see?
Well, the Fed is absolutely in a box, as you said, because every time they try to not just tighten, but even scale back their easing, the financial markets, which are just floating on this huge tide of easy money, they go crazy. You know, the stock market just tanks. And since the system is too financially fragile to survive now, even a garden variety 20% stock market bear market, the Fed always has to back off. And this has happened, what, 3 times in the last 5 years or so, yep. Where we have a tapering, then a taper tantrum, and then easing again. Now, the Fed is going to try something like that again, it looks like. I mean, they're talking about tapering. And remember, scaling back their ease is the same thing as tightening, because we're accustomed, you know, the debt addict financial system needs this much new credit to be created every year, let's say $3 trillion. So if you only create $2.5 trillion new dollars of credit, to them, that's a tightening. You giving them a smaller dose of their monetary heroin and they go into withdrawal. So I think we're at the point now of the pre-taper tantrum, where just talking about scaling back monetary ease causes the financial markets to flake out. And this last week has been a disturbing week for the stock market, because the Fed pretty much, some numbers came out that implied that the Fed wouldn't have to tighten as soon as thought. And yet the stock market went down, which means that financial speculators are getting more and more nervous, yeah, about whatever's going to happen next. And they're selling in anticipation. So now the Fed has this real dilemma, because they know they need to tighten, because inflation is much higher than they're reporting. And they're already reporting crisis level inflation. So they want to tighten. They want to do what they were taught to do in the face of rising inflation, but they know they can't do it without blowing up the financial system. So what they will do this next week is lie in some way. They will come out with a focus grouped statement that is not designed around the truth or necessarily untruth or anything. It's designed to get the markets to behave in a way that that prevents financial Armageddon. So it's not even worth listening to the Fed anymore, because you know what they know they have to do, and you know they can't do it, and you know they're going to lie about it. So why bother? You know, why bother tuning into Fed meetings? Because it's just going to be something that you could make up ahead of time just by thinking about what a focus group would respond well to.
It's like knowing Powell's always going to come out in some shade of purple tie. Have you ever noticed that?
No, I haven't looked at Powell in like 3 years.
Well, that's true. How would you know? That's right. Well, Mother Yellen always wears that purple pantsuit whenever she's in public. And, you know, purple being that, you know, we're moderate blend centrist like, you know, Hillary and Bill were wearing when Hillary conceded defeat.
So, Craig, you could look at that as purple being the color of kings from European aristocracy. So it could be a signal to the rest of the aristocracy that I'm one of you, right?
Well, and Powell will either have his dark purple, like Minnesota Viking purple, tie on next Wednesday, or he's got a lighter shade of purple. But very, very rarely will you ever see him. But anyway, that's just an aside, John, before I distract myself and go off on another tangent. Just one more topic that I want to get your thoughts on. As I mentioned when we got started, not to make you sound like some kind of old fart, but you've been doing this for a while, right? You've been writing books. You've been running your website. And again, the website Dollar Collapse. What has changed? I mean, Dollar Collapse implies, okay, well, then something's going to come after that, because you can't just have everything collapse. You know, we're not going to go back to, you know, barter and that sort of thing. So it must always be something that comes next. But over the almost 20 years you've been doing this, what's different now as it's played out? How has your thought process, your plan changed of what you think is, you know, where this is all headed?
Well, you're right that I've been doing this a long time. And you could statistically call me an old fart. You know, I've been doing this since I had black hair, and I no longer have black hair. But right. But you know what's happening now is basically exactly the script that seemed likely back then, except that it's gone on longer and the numbers are much bigger than seemed possible. And, you know, it seemed like the numbers were overwhelmingly dangerous back in the 2000s, you know, prior to the Great Recession. And, you know, the question is, how did we survive this long? Not that, are we making mistakes? Of course, we're making gigantic financial mistakes, but how are we still making these mistakes? And I think the answer is that the world, for the first time, is armed with unlimited printing presses and fiat currencies. You know, every major country is able to print as much money as it wants to and use that money to fool people into thinking things are better than they are. Mm-hmm. And that's a tremendous power to be able to do that. So it's allowed these guys to continue on this course much longer than basic financial common sense would indicate is possible, which means we don't know when this ends, because if they can, you know, if they can spend 10 years doing things they shouldn't be able to do, why can't they spend 10 more? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is sort of what's going on now. You know, we're reaching the point where things are getting very unstable. And that is a direct result of all the crazy amounts of money and credit and guarantees and derivatives that we have allowed to either created or allowed to come into existence. And those things are inherently destabilizing. So we're reaching the end of this game, I think, with no tools for fixing it. That's the really important realization that will come soon. When we look back at the 1970s and say, okay, well, this is sort of like that. Well, why don't we just fix it the way we fixed it back then? Well, we fixed it back then with 20% interest rates. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine if we tried something like that now?
Yeah.
You know, it would blow up the entire leveraged speculating community, which is to say almost everybody. So the world would end. The world as we know it would end if we tried to use 1970s tools for this problem. But if you don't have those tools, you don't have any tools. There's nothing left to do to fix this. And so when people realize that, that's when things totally spin out of control, because everybody heads for the exits, tries to get out of their financial assets, the things that depend on fiat currencies for their value, like government bonds and bank accounts and into real assets. And, you know, the door that leads you to gold and silver or to cryptocurrencies or to farmland, those are very small doors in relation to the size of the crowd that's going to want to get through.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. And that's when things really get crazy. And when, you know, you try to buy silver it's not that you have to pay up for it. You just can't get it. You know, the dealers will say, hey, we just don't have inventory. I'm sorry. I can't even quote you a price.
Right.
And those days are coming, you know, and that's why that's really the gold and silver thesis right there, is that there will come a time when you literally get to name your own price for this stuff. And so you totally want to own it now in anticipation.
John, do you think I'm correct when I've been calling it a function of confidence, in that the numbers are outrageous? You know, I remember back when I was in college, you know, when Reagan was president, you know, when we were doing pushing $300 billion in annual deficit. Now we're doing $300 billion monthly deficits, and nobody can even comprehend what $1 trillion is. You know, when you think about 1 trillion seconds, you know, 1 trillion minutes, that sort of thing. And we're talking $3 trillion deficits. And that the only reason that the plates have kept spinning is confidence. You know, okay, I'm confident that things are going to be okay tomorrow, and that that when things really get out of control is when confidence fails. And then I guess what I'm getting at is, do you agree with me that the confidence often, you know, is the line I keep using is like Hemingway's, you know, description of bankruptcy. You know, it fails slowly and then all at once. Could that still be in the cards in terms of this, you know, dollar collapse idea?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the mechanism, because a fiat currency doesn't have a physical existence. All it is a concept that has value only as long as we have faith in the people managing that currency to maintain its value. And as soon as we lose faith in those people, then the currency becomes inherently worthless. It goes to its intrinsic value, which is zero. So you just get this fall off of the table. If you look at, for instance, the Weimar Germany hyperinflation, we still remember that name. And yet it was just like a 2-year-long period. The currency was basically okay. And then in the space of 2 years, you were burning it in order to keep warm, you know?
Right.
And that's how fast these things happen. So the idea that, Jim Rickards has a story he tells about his clients who say, yeah, okay, tell me right before the crisis happens, and then I'll buy a bunch of gold and stuff. And he says, you know, if you just won't be able to find gold at that time, because right. we won't know when it happens, when it's going to happen. And so that's the way I think this is going to go, that it'll just spin out of control when people start to lose confidence. And, you know, you see that out there now, where all of a sudden we don't really think the U.S. is very good at foreign policy at the moment.
Right, right.
And we aren't that good at building stuff, because we've shifted all our manufacturing to China. So a lot of what we make either isn't that great of quality, or we just don't make it at all. For instance, the whole pharmaceutical thing just lately, we had a pandemic and the building blocks for a lot of basic pharmaceuticals weren't made in the U.S. So we were kind of stuck there for a while. We're on the verge of losing faith in ourselves as a society. And as Martin Armstrong likes to say, that's when gold really goes up. It's not because of inflation or anything like that. It's when people lose faith in the government, then they lose faith in the money. And when they lose faith in the money, they get out of that money and they get into things that will probably hold value better. And that's real assets, you know, that's the stuff that has always been valuable year after year, century after century, going back 5,000 years.
Yep.
And again, small little doorways to get into those things, because they're tiny markets compared to stocks and bonds and Miami condos and things like that. You know, you really want to make your move as soon as possible and then just sit and wait, knowing history's on your side, or you're
that's
on
right.
the side of history.
That's right. And again, John, you got a lot of history doing this. Dollarcollapse.com, John Rubino. If it's not already on your favorites list of sites that you visit every day, it should be, because as John described it, he's out there aggregating all the news that matters in this regard. And rather than you having to do it yourself, just stop by dollarcollapse.com. All kinds of good information there. John, I think too, do you have an email distribution list, anything like that, that people can sign up for?
I do. There's a join the email list button at the top of the page. Just come over, click on that, put your email address in there, and I'll send you whatever I write for free. And we don't use your email accounts or other personal information for anything else except that one thing.
Well, that would be a pretty good idea, I would think, too. So, John, thank you. Thanks for all you've done. You've been at this long, like I said, longer than I have, and you've been a force for educating and helping people now for a couple of decades, and I sure appreciate it. I don't know if it's going to be another couple of decades before the confidence finally collapses. Something tells me it's going to be shorter than that, but before it does, I hope we can speak again sometime soon.
That'd be great. Thanks, Craig.
John, always great to hear from you. And thanks, everybody, for listening. It's always fun to do these Thursday conversations. Like I said, we won't have one next week, but we'll be back at it here when we get toward the end of September. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great rest of your day.